four midos for the children. They spend the first 5 years of their lives at home, and as many psychologists will say, the most formative years. So I think it starts at the home and continues in the school.
And Yankee, what do you agree with that?
I think that ultimately responsibility for everything lies with parents. That's how I look at it, as an educator and as a parent. but I definitely think that certainly schools have a responsibility to teach mitzvot and to teach values. And I think it's very important that parents support the values that the schools are teaching. And I also think that parents should pick schools that reflect the values that they believe in, because there's nothing worse than conflict and the lack of congruence. So that would be my short answer.
So let me jump in. Reb David Cohn was on the program 2 weeks ago when we were discussing the Aguna issue, and we asked him what are possible solutions to the Aguna crisis. And he said halachically, he said there's only one. He said the prenuptials would work. And then he said the primary problem is that the schools do not teach midos and ahavas Yisrael. He said in the Aguna situations that he's involved with, the way the husband has acted, he said, has been so reprehensible. You just look at this person and know that there has been no chinuch given to him in midos. And he said the schools have to do a better job of teaching our children ahavas Yisrael, respect, and midos. And he said they're lacking. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
Can I jump in?
Yes.
First of all, we're dealing with something that is confusing because there's a dichotomy. We know fundamentally the Derech Eretz is Kadma LaTorah. So basic human decency, basic midos, come before the Torah. That's Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. On the other hand, our primary source for ethics, midos tovos, morality, is Pirkei Avos. And that starts by saying, Moshe Kibel Torah Misina Mosar LeYeshua, the line of traditional transmission of our value system is through the Torah. In fact, what Pirkei Avos is teaching us is that you cannot detach midos tovos, values, morality, character building from Torah. It's not only based on Torah, Torah generates it. So we're dealing with a dichotomy that Rav David Cohn is absolutely correct in pointing out. There's a Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, and then there's the Torah, which is the basis and the driving force that gives rise to all Midas Tovos. There are other cultures that tried to secularly generate humanitarian values, Midas, social skills, if you will. We know it doesn't work. It produced Germany in its ugliest form. So if you detach Midas from Torah, you could peg it to any kind of other humanitarian basis. It just doesn't work. You cannot separate the Midas from the Torah in a gist. And the school definitely is one arena. The other arena is the home. I'll give you a concrete example without getting into the philosophy of it. That happened exactly this morning in shul. My friend who was davening with me told me that someone came over to him, a gentleman came over to him and asked him if the seat next to him was available. He told me there's no one sitting there. So he took the chair and brought it over to the Ezra's Nashim, which was right next to them, divided only by a mechitza. And he was curious to see if there were perhaps not enough chairs in the Ezra's Nashim. So he followed him to the Ezra's Nashim in the back of the room. And he sees an elderly woman who had a African-American nurse, caregiver. The elderly woman was davening. The caregiver did not have a chair. So he went and got the chair for the caregiver so that she could sit down for a long davening, over 2 hours. What he told me struck him odd was about a dozen people passed by. No one thought to stop and bring the caregiver a chair. Where is that learned? That sensitivity, is it in the school? Is it at home? Where exactly is that sensitivity, that derech eretz, that midas tovus? Where would that kiddush Hashem that this gentleman did, where is that picked up from? I think it boils down to very, very basic issues. And those are the issues that we're dealing with over here. There are obviously many, many more examples. This one was poignant only because it happened this morning, during davening.
So Rabbi Horowitz, let me conclude that thought. Do you, in your opinion, are we teaching those values in yeshivas today?
Well, if I may be a little provocative, if you have a kid with spectacular midas who's a weak learner, and you have a kid who's a spectacular learner with weak midas, who's going to have an easier time getting into high school?
Now, clearly the one with the spectacular marks, right?
Okay, so there you go. So isn't that a problem?
Yeah, but that's so not to say, it's not to say that we...
statement that we... I'm sorry?
I understand you completely. Are you saying that what? We're placing in our value system, I just want to bring you, it could be provocative, that's the purpose. Because if we don't deal with the issues because they're too provocative, they're swept under the carpet and they don't belong there. Are you saying that our value system in yeshivas is to promote scholastic excellence over midas? I would have to tend to agree with you.
I'm saying, unfortunately, I think, I don't know if you saw it, it was, I read a letter, I mean, I don't know if it was published anywhere, but I saw a letter that a kid wrote about returning a wallet. The kid returned the wallet with $400, isn't it, about 7-8 years ago. An eighth grader found a wallet with $400 in cash. It came from a poor home. Now, you know, not a poor, but the $400 was a lot of money for him. Probably a lot of money for most of us. And he wrote a letter. He was rejected from a number of schools because his learning was a little weak. And he wrote a letter to the principals and saying, like, hey, guys, wouldn't you like to have me in the yeshiva? So I'm saying, there's only in any setting, there's only there's only one main goal that you have, and by definition, everything else becomes secondary. So if we're making the statement that a kid whose learning is superlative is the number one criterion in measuring who gets the coveted spot in a quote unquote great school. So what's the message then? That is the message, that the learning is more important than the midas. You can't have two first. Let me ask you another question. Are schools dedicating time to this? I went to Teshuva Tarvadas. Our great, great, great Rebbe in Tzadik Rav Tamzich Tzadik Avacha insisted that he rarely insisted on anything. But he constantly, constantly spoke to us about devoting 10% of our time for weaker students. He used to say the balabatim, meaning, you know, people who are working and not in the yeshiva world any longer, are obligated to give 10% of their money. You guys don't have money, so you have to give 10% of your time. And it was a core value in the yeshiva.
Are you advocating that the boys who have top midas should be the number one billing in a yeshiva, the boys who have the best midas?
I can tell you right now, I look for yeshivas for my children. That's what I look for.
So you see, but in almost any area of excellence, I mean, take sports. They all have an award for the gentleman, but the gentleman is not the one who ultimately carries the flag. I mean, when you think of Jewish leaders, the Gedolim and the Chafetz Chaim, he was a great Baal Midas, but that's not what distinguished him from all the millions of other people in his generation. It's true he also had great midos, but we can't put, you know, scholastic excellence second because, you know, you're making, would you take a chazan because he has fantastic midos? I think these are all preconditions to excellence, but you can't make that
Wait, a chazan is not the word question, but if I wanted somebody davening Mi'ila, if I wanted somebody davening in shul on our behalf, I would rather pick up, if you told me, to the extreme, a person who's very learned and not a mensch, or somebody who's a mensch and not learned, I take the mensch any day of the week. I would want him representing me. So chazan is a different example, because you're picking somebody, as a chazan, you're picking somebody who sings well. I'm taking it to the, it's an extreme example, but I'm saying overall, I think there's been a step back I can certainly tell you as far as I am concerned, as far as the chinuch that we got from our rabbeim, there was a constant emphasis on midas. It was something we heard about all the time. I tell you this, just take as far as this 10% is concerned. Do you know, I was a very weak student in school. I really didn't start learning much till, you know, 16, 17 years old. Do you know who my big brother Chavrutas were? You might mention recognize some of the names. Rabbi Bera Liner, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, Rabbi Shachli Weinberger. These are the first three big brother Chavrutas that I had in yeshiva. All three of them are machanchem today, and quite good ones, if I may add. So this was something that we were taught that just came with the culture of our yeshiva. I don't know that message is being given. Some of the yeshivas in my day did not give that message.
So question for Rabbi Hertz, Rameya. Do you think that, and there's a presupposition here, that there is an uptick in divorce in our community? Do you think that possibility of an uptick in divorce is because of the fact that the yeshivas have migrated away from teaching midas?
There is a presupposition here that the yeshivas have migrated. I don't think that's true. It's also very hard to relate it to an increase in divorce rate. The reason we hear about more and more about divorces is because the population has exploded. The Flum population has exploded. I don't think percentage-wise there's been a study, certainly not one that I'm familiar with, and I am familiar with some of these issues. It could be a combination of factors. I'm trying to understand about Hurwitz, because it seems that he was saying something that was contradictory. On the one hand, he says that by promoting the value of scholastic prowess, scholastic achievement, we sacrifice the midos, and yet he says that he had very formative chavrusas that really molded him and gave him the midos and the tchunos that allowed him to really accomplish a lot, and he has certainly accomplished a lot. So is a question of yeshivas in the whole versus specifics? I'm trying to understand how to reconcile those two positions. And then I want to get back to your question, David, which is a very provocative question, a very good question. I'm not shying away from it. I just want to first reconcile what Rabbi Hurwitz was saying so that we get a clarity.
I'm not quite clear, Rabbi Hurwitz. What are you asking? What wasn't clear?
You said yeshivas are responsible for causing some of the problem in that they promote scholastic achievement as the benchmark for excellence. And yet you related from your personal background that you are very, very fortunate to be in yeshiva where there was a lot of emphasis and a lot of training on midas tovus, development of character. How do you see, I don't understand how to reconcile the two things that you've said. Do you see something that is more recent, that has been a migration away from midos and a shift in emphasis? I'm just
I'm saying this. First of all, what I mentioned about schools taking, accepting or not accepting certain students, I've consistently, my opinions are not a private matter. I've been very vocal about my thoughts of in writing and speaking for the last 20 years. I've been consistently saying this. I think that the pressure in the schools, as far as the pace of learning and accepting and rejecting students, is driven far more by parents than by schools. I've constantly said that, and I believe that to be true. I think it's very unfortunate that schools are so selective, and I think that most of the vast majority of this pressure is coming from parents, not from students, not from school. And I think it goes in terms of how the pace of the learning as well. I think the pace of the learning and the length of the school day and all of these changes from when I went to yeshiva in the 1970s are driven much more by parents than by schools. I think schools that are kind and in their admission policies, you know, immediately pay dearly for it. Would you agree with that?
Rabbi Yaakov, if I may rephrase what you're saying so that I understand it more clearly, and if I'm putting words in your mouth, please correct me. What you're saying is that it's a mutual culpability. The schools are catering to the parents. The parents are exerting pressure to put more emphasis on being selective and exclusive. Is that basically what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's more. I think it's more parents. I think parents are more to blame in this arena.
Yeah, it's driven by parents, but the schools are catering to that.
I think many schools feel that they have no choice, because if they do not maintain a certain standard, or if they show understanding in their admission policies, they get labeled as a substandard school, and parents will, you know,
will go naturally to a school
that's more selective.
I think
any school principal would, in a moment of candor, would tell you that that's the case.
Let me just interrupt. We are speaking with two famed mechanchim, two very famous educators, Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz of Darkei Noam in Muncie and Rabbi Meir Hertz of Tashbar in Lakewood. If you have any questions, you can email them to questions@headlinesbook.com or call 1-844-HEADLINES. That's 1-844-4-HEADLINES. I'm sorry, Rabbi Hertz, continue. What were you saying?
No, I just want to jump in for 1 second. I don't want to give the impression that I think our children or our schools are lacking in leadership. You know, I have the great schuss of interacting with thousands of mechanchim, of educators, every year. I think they're amazing. I think I lecture regularly to educators, to mechanchim and mechanchais. I think they're dedicated. They're wonderful human beings. And they genuinely, genuinely, genuinely care about the kids. I think, you know, there was a study in Eretz Yisrael. They released a study a number of years ago, talking about the clipping of these on the cereal boxes, like they have here in the States. They have, points that are given for buying a certain number of cereals and turning it in for charitable causes or whatever it is, and the kids from Orthodox backgrounds were far, far more likely to turn them in, and the executives, I mean, this is a numbers oriented business. This isn't a touchy feely. These are marketing people. And they said clearly that the yeshiva kids are trained from a very young age to be charitable, and that chesed is a high priority, and that it naturally driven to accumulate these points. I mean, you look at the values that our kids have; it's extraordinary. So I'm not chassid shalom saying that our children don't have midas and the schools aren't teaching them. I think we have, by and large, great role models. If you're asking for an area that we're really looking at it and talking about what area, an area that might need improvement, I think it would be, I think this area of focusing, putting so much emphasis on academic excellence, especially at a young age, I think detracts from what should be more emphasis on teaching midos. Not chas v'shalom that we're not doing it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, so here's Rabbi Meir, go in and I have some outside questions, but go ahead.
Yes, Rabbi Yaakov brought up a very good point, and I want to just elaborate on it at the risk of sounding self-promotional for the school that I'm involved with. We recently concluded admissions for the coming school year, which is starting in September. We typically, during the interview, when we interview the parents, ask them what brought them to Teshbar. There are, after all, 55 Chadorim in Lakewood right now, as we speak, 55. So they certainly have a large field to choose from. The reason is not that we want to hear the praise for the school. We simply want to make sure that we know what brought them to Teshbar and we can supply and deliver what they're expecting. That's why we asked them. Very fascinating two answers we recently got, Mamish, in the last few weeks. One of them told the interviewer that Reb Chaim Mintz, his mashgiach from Staten Island, is what brought him to Teshbar. And I asked him, did he mention Teshbar? He said no. He told me, I need to find three criteria. A school for my primary candidate, which has three criteria. One, it teaches in English, not in Yiddish. Two, it has an excellent secular studies program. Three, it has a diversified parent body. He said, when I sifted through all the schools with the three criteria that my mashgiach, Reb Chaim Mintz Shlita, told me, I ended up in Teshbar. So I think that ties into your Ahavas Yisrael. If you're looking for a monolithic, homogeneous parent body, I don't know what kind of a message that sends about Ahavas Yisrael. And again, I know I'm being a little bit provocative. If you're saying we don't want working parents, we don't want parents who wear brown shoes or blue shirt during the week, what kind of a statement is that about Ahavas Yisrael? That's point number one. The other question that I had was also, I asked someone what brought him to Teshbar. He says, you know, since my son has been 3 years old, I've been watching children in bar mitzvahs and seeing which ones are behaving and how they're behaving and how they're conducting themselves. And now they're talking about boys in the seventh grade in bar mitzvahs. He says, invariably, I found out they were either in Teshbar or he mentioned one other school, okay? So there's a Derech Eretz, and there are schools in Lakewood, and I certainly don't mean to say that it's only Teshbar. But I think, Rabbi Yaakov, there is an emphasis in some schools. There is an emphasis on Midos. There is an emphasis of imparting it, as you said, and I don't think that we're moving away from that as a core value in the instruction and in the role modeling that we're having in our Chadorim. And I say that for all the schools. Yes, there is a great emphasis on scholastics. The competition is in scholastics. It's more easily measurable. It's more easily discernible. And that is why it seems like that is where it's at. But I think that Midas Tavis are definitely a part of it, certainly for the boys and also absolutely for the girls. I just want to end with one thought. There is a program that has been implemented now at the last count in 370 schools, 371 schools. We're talking about Hasidic schools, Litvish schools, modern Orthodox schools. It's called the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Program. It's Kain Olam, Shem Re'aloshon, Moshe Aloshon, Yisrael Aloshon. Four programs to teach Midos. These are names, but they're all four different aspects of a Midos program that is making very gradual but very successful inroads into our school systems. I don't happen to know very much about it because it's run by a fellow by the name of Rabbi Shlomo Orenstein, happens to be a Teshbar parent. But he travels throughout the country.
And he's my Talmud. I was his 8th grade Rebbe.
Pardon me?
I was his 8th grade Rebbe.
Right. He's a parent in Teshbar. And he does a wonderful job of introducing Midos programs into our schools. I think he's seeing tremendous feedback and tremendous success. So I think there is an effort in the schools now to try to incorporate what is secularly referred to as social skills in our lexicon, in our dictionary. It's Midos. Go ahead, Reb David. I'm sorry.
So let me ask a question. This is Jerry from Teaneck sent in this question. He asked this question. He said, my child will be working in New York City, and he will be encountering many adults of different faiths. Why aren't issues of faith discussed in yeshiva? Amuna, bitachin, evolution, countering these thoughts. These are all issues that they will encounter. And why should they be blindsided by these questions when they come out into the workforce? Rabbi Horowitz, can you respond to that?
I wrote an article in Mishpacha magazine 8 years ago. It was called Rambam or Ravid, and I discussed it that the Rambam Maimonides writes the question that the age old philosophical question of how could we believe that we have free choice, we have bechira, if we believe that Hashem knows what we're going to do. So it fundamentally seems to be at odds with each other. So the Rambam really. He says, we can't understand Hashem's thinking. So in today's vernacular, you'd say that he punted. He didn't really answer the question directly. He said it's really an issue of faith. So the Ravid asks, so why did Rebbe speak? Why did he ask the question if he didn't really have a hard answer to it? It would have been better if he left it to faith. So the Kesher of Mishnah, another commentary, comes along many years later, and he says, well, Rebbe asked this question because any thinking person is going to have this question. So I wrote that the approach of the Rambam was basically confront an issue, talk about it. If you don't have a perfect answer that will satisfy everyone, it's okay. Let them know that the Rambam struggled with it. That's what the Kesher Mishnah said. So I said that some people have the Rambam's approach and say, if there's an issue, let's say, like evolution or whatever it is, let's talk about it and give the children the hashkafa, the Jewish philosophy, on it while they're in our classroom. And others have the approach of the Ravid, don't bring up anything that's going to rock the boat. And I was writing in the context of the internet that I have to be practical. As a manal of the yeshiva, I know that regardless of the level of exposure to the internet at this current time, there's going to be a time in their lives, and it's going to be earlier and earlier, that they're going to be, the internet technology is going to challenge every single thing I teach them in school. So I think we should be doing it. Many times it's not, because for a variety of reasons, one of which many of the teachers aren't comfortable with these discussions or feel it should be. I definitely believe, I wrote 8 articles about this whole technology issue. I think it is changing everything. And I think we do need to address these, and not necessarily in third grade, but as the kids get older, I think we should have forums that we should be able to ask questions of people who, or teach our teachers how to respond to that. I hope my answer wasn't too long-winded.
What do you say, Rabbi Hertz?
I think Jerry's question from Teaneck, one of the best questions I've heard. I just want to respond very briefly. Arachim in Eretz Yisrael, who have brought back to Yiddishkeit over 200,000 Yidden, have now developed a curriculum to teach Emunah, the basics of our faith, and they're trying to implement it into the high school level through Torah Mesorah. There's another program that is by Rebbetzin Leah Cohn, also developed an Emunah program curriculum, a full curriculum. There are people who are noticing that this is lacking in our educational system right now. very much so lacking. We are not preparing our children to go into the workplace or into colleges and universities and be confronted with these questions and have the answers. Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal came to Lakewood, gave a series of lectures. The place was mobbed. They never heard this in an articulate, compelling, and cogent way. So I totally agree. This is very, very lacking. We don't have it right now already implemented, and it's a priority.
And I could offer you, having had the schutz to send three daughters to seminary in Eretz Yisrael, one of the first things that almost all of them say is they go into an environment where, to their credit, the heads of the seminaries typically tell the girls things like, look, if there's anything you have questions about, you can ask us. And they encourage the young ladies to challenge them. And they'll ask questions like, how do you really know that the mob will happen? Or how do you know that, how do we really prove that? And many of them say, well, why did we do this? Why did it take a certain, why are we doing this in year 13, right? Which is what you're saying, basically, right? That's what we're saying.
Right.
Why are we waiting until year 13 to deal with this? Why weren't we taught this in high school? Or why wasn't this approach used?
Okay, this is Headlines. We're talking to Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, the Dean of Darkei Naim in Muncie, the founder of Project Yes, and Rabbi Meir Hertz, Dean and founder of Tashbar in Lakewood, two very noted and brilliant educators. If you would like to ask any questions, send them in to questions@headlinesbook.com or call 1-844-4-HEADLINES. Here's a question from Chaim from Borough Park. Why aren't topics like molestation adequately addressed in yeshivas? A member of my family was molested. He had no idea how to deal with it. It's years later. We are still dealing with the fallout. Would one of you like to address this?
Rabbi Horowitz, you want to go first?
Well, it's a topic that I've been writing and speaking about for 12 years now. I began noticing 12 years ago, I noticed, what a big problem it was, and I started being very vocal about it. And 5 years ago, we started producing materials. And with the chesed of Hashem, we published a book. Chaim, there's a book called Let's Stay Safe that we published that, together with Art Scroll, with the Haskamah of Torah Nisar and the Aguda. We sold 26,000 copies of it. It's available in all the bookstores. We just published a Yiddish book that sold 5,000 copies, Baruch Hashem, since Pesach. Things, Baruch Hashem, thankfully, are changing. The climate is definitely very different than it was even a few years ago. Do we still have a long way to go? Absolutely. But we definitely, things certainly are improving in terms of educating our children.
Do you speak about it in your school?
Of course. I did the first workshop on child safety in our yeshiva 15 years ago. I brought somebody in to speak to the parents 15 years ago before the summer. We did it every summer for a number of years, where we spoke to the parents how to speak to their kids before the kids go off to summer camp. It's something that I've constantly been doing all along. Look, I have a perspective that most school principals don't. I run an organization for teens at risk, which I call my night job. So, I don't expect the average person to see things the way I do. But
Rabbi Hertz, do you have any classes, or do you teach it in class?
We do train the Rebbeim. We do train the Anhalot to be aware of this, to be on the lookout for it. To answer Chaim and Bar Park's question, very succinctly, there is not enough public outrage. It's a political hot potato. We need more public outrage about all these cases. I know it's no consolation to you, but we have failed our children in this area, miserably failed them. There's no way to whitewash it. We need more and more public outrage, and that's when the leaders will heed the Tzibur's call for more action. It's as simple as that.
So why don't you do workshops in school?
We're going to train. We're training the Rebbeim. We're training the Anhala. We're doing everything we can. We have made significant progress. And when I say we, I'm not talking about one school. I'm talking this problem is emerging. It's coming out of the closet. That's the good news. The bad news, it's not coming out quick enough.
The mayor, I make you an offer. I will be delighted, free of charge, to come speak to your parents and teach them the basics.
It's
very simple.
It is
modest the way as you could possibly imagine. There is nothing there that is anything other than extremely appropriate. It's a very, very... there's three short YouTube videos that are on my website, or you can just Google child safety and my name. It'll come up. The fundamentals are very simple. I'd be delighted. I'd be honored to come speak in your school if you'd invite me.
So let me ask. Here we have Herschel Rosenberg is asking the following question. I think it's a really fabulous question. He says, and I think this has to do maybe a little bit with off the derech and in general the competition that kids have for their attention today. He says, why don't yeshivas spend more time teaching the beauty of Yiddishkeit to make them love what they're part of, instead of learning so much, but not feeling a connection? We are losing so many children because they've never learned the beauty of what we're part of.
Reb David, can I jump in?
Yes.
Okay. I want to get back, because I don't want to be a Baal Choyv. I said that I would get back to the issue that you mentioned about divorce. I say, I don't know the exact correlation between the overemphasis on scholastics and divorce, but I could tell you that almost all the experts, without exception, say that there is a linkage, there is a correlation between the overemphasis on scholastics and the children off the derech, and that there is a cause and effect relationship. I think what your last questioner is asking, your most recent question is asking, is pointing in that direction. That brought me back to that question. He's absolutely right. It's so much positive. There's so much beauty in Yiddishkeit, so much, and it really depends on the individual mechanech. Some are more skilled at participating and involving the children in it and recognizing Ashreinu Matoiv Chalkenu U'mayofa Yerush Aseinu, and some are less. But it's not appropriate to put the blame on the Rebbeim. The Rebbeim are doing heroic work, and I can tell you that just by looking at the products that the Moisdas are putting out. The Moisdas are putting out 95-98% wholesome children, healthy children, children that are happy and comfortable with their Yiddishkeit. Take a look at the vast majority, and I'm talking about high, high percentage. Could we expect more? Yes. Are we here to chastise the Rebbeim or the Moros? No, I think they're doing a phenomenal job. I have to tell you.
I agree wholeheartedly. Absolutely. I agree with that.
The historical perspective, coming from a historical perspective, the Rebbeim of 40, 50 years ago, who were the She'eris of Plato, are not the Rebbeim that we're having today. It was not a very dignified or prestigious position. It was almost, if one could term it so, employment of last resort. Today, to be a Rebbe, to be a Mora, is a very prestigious position in the community. We're getting people for one eighth grade job in the Cheder in Lakewood, 200 candidates, just 2 years ago. An eighth grade Rebbe was taken to be a Menahel in another, 200 candidates. We're seeing something totally different, much higher caliber, and that's because the pay is greater, the circumstances, the conditions are better, and it's a well-respected position. So I think the trend is going to be more and more positive, more and more qualified, highly qualified people are turning away from business or other work opportunities and going into chinuch. I see a very positive momentum and a very positive trend.
So Remeyer says in answer to Hajor, it's getting better. That's his. He says it's much better than it was. That's the answer to Herschel Rosenberg. I want to again say we are speaking to Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, the Dean of Darkei Noyim and Muncie, founder of Project Yes, and Rabbi Meir Hertz, who, as a disclaimer, I want to put in, I sent three of my children, and we had, I think, fantastic results as Yeshiva of Tashbar and Lakewood, a noted Mechanach. If you'd like to send in questions, send it to questions@headlinesbook.com. Or call 1-844-4-HEADLINES, 1-844-4-HEADLINES if you have a question that's really on target. We have a caller, Yitzi, from the west side. We'll put him through. Yitzi, what's your question?
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is more common. The second one's a question. About the what was just mentioned, that we're seeing in the high 90 percentile happy students that are comfortable with their Yiddishkeit, I think most experts in chinuch of later teenagers would strongly dispute that number. I think that number is statistically impossible because we know that, for example, the Alter of Slobodka, the brilliance of his chinuch was that he recognized everybody is made with different strengths. There was no such thing as having one curriculum for every single student. And yet today, we have a situation, we have a generation of plenty of yeshivas. Most of the yeshivas have the same structure of what students learn in advanced Talmudic studies, and that statistically will not work probably for more than 70% of every class. I think most rabbeim that deal with first-year Beis Medrash guys all have concluded, at least to me and other people that work with these people and teach these people, that the statistic is far lower. The second question I want to present is, one of the most commonly discussed issues in trying to integrate into the yeshiva system is issues of emunah, and that was discussed a few minutes ago. And I just want to say that it seems every time we get together, people that are teaching, one of the most common problems is that who is going to create the curriculum and decide which shittas in the Rishayim and which of the theories are mainstream? Let's face it, the real issue is that there's almost not a single topic that's agreed upon in ideas of Emunah, even the 13 principles, history, evolution, no one agrees on these topics. And whatever curriculum you're going to create, there's always going to be loopholes because that's why all of the early commentators disagreed about them. That's why it's almost an impossible task, and that's why it's a tremendous risk of teaching in the school because you're teaching something that cannot be complete by definition. I'm curious for your thoughts.
Rabbi Yanky, you want to handle that?
I'm sorry, maybe it was my phone. I found it very hard to follow the conversation. It was very choppy.
Ramey, did you hear the questions?
No, this is exactly what I wanted to ask you. Could you synopsize the questions? Because
yes.
It was very faint. It was almost.
It was very hard for us to hear.
Okay, he basically, yes. His question was.
I wanted to ask you. Could you synopsize the questions? Because it was very faint.
It was very hard for us to hear.
Okay, his question was.
I cannot hear the question.
Could you synopsize the question? Because it was very faint. It was
very hard for us to hear.
Okay,
Yitzi, you have to shut down. You have to turn down your radio because it's coming in. He has his radio on. Yeah, you have your radio on. You have to lower your radio. Okay. So his question was as follows. He says that how is it possible to teach when it comes to things like Amunah and Betachin, how would it be possible to create a curriculum when there is so much discord in how to respond to issues such as evolution? Even the Yud Gimel Ikrim, how to teach them is in the Rishayim. There are so many different versions. So how could you create a curriculum given the fact that there is almost no agreement on how to respond to age of the world, etc.? It seems like an impossible task. So how could Mechanchim possibly respond to it?
Can I answer that?
Go ahead, Rabbi Hertz.
May I try to answer that?
Yes.
Rav David, there are people who are doing this for over 40 years now, 35, 40 years. The Arachim group in Eretz Yisrael, they have prepared a series of lectures that they have tested in the field. They hold seminars. As I said, over 200,000 Yidden who were alienated came back.
They have worked out all these issues. They have a curriculum that is tried, tested, and proven successful. They know how to answer this. And by the way, they went into the Weizmann Institute and delivered it in front of all the scientists there with great success, okay? These are not new issues. How to do it in the modern lexicon and in the modern vernacular, dealing with these issues has already been worked out. We do not have to recreate the wheel. Very good point, but the answer is that there is a compelling, literally compelling, and they're taking source materials like the Kuzari and like the other books that are out there. The foundations of our faith are clear and compelling.
If I may just jump in on that. I think speaking specifically about questions related to science and you know, age of the universe, as Rav David mentioned, and you know, all of that, I think there's been a very unfortunate, again, I'm speaking globally, but overall, I think it's very unfortunate that there has been, in many areas, far less of an emphasis on general studies than there were when I went to school, and the way we have in our yeshiva, we're very committed to a great general studies department, and when you talk about science, a lot of the kids who went to yeshivas where these things were brushed aside and weren't taught well, they're not even equipped to speak the language of science, to speak the language of whatever's being presented to them, because they're really not schooled in it. So they get blown away when people who do have a background in this start talking. They honestly, many of them get embarrassed that they don't even know how to respond to this.
Okay, here we have a question from Mayor from Montreal. How do we deal with the internet? My children see me on my cell phone. They see me on my smartphone. They see at work, I'm constantly on it. How do we address it? Do we integrate or do we isolate? They're definitely going to encounter it throughout their entire lifetimes. There was recently an asifa which prescribed and basically assured the internet. Rabbi Waxman said that whoever has internet has no chelik la'olam haba. Is this a realistic way to deal with the internet?
We only have 10 minutes, David, so maybe you should devote a show to this.
Was this question directed to me or David?
It's to both of you. I mean, it's to, you know, how do you talk to your students? I mean, and once they're past fourth grade, they're going to be on the internet. So Mayor from Montreal is asking, how do we educate our children? Do we say Ein lo chelik la'olama? Do we make believe that it doesn't exist? Do we just say it's totally usur? Do we try to educate it, use it as a tool like a sharp knife, and use it intelligently? How do we teach our children to deal with the internet?
I think what the outcome of the asifa was very simple: filters. Effective filters. I don't think that the children who see the grown-ups using smartphones or internet have an issue with it once they understand that there are excellent filters that are introduced. And I don't see that as a big of a problem as it may appear at first blush. I think that without the filter, we are exposing our children and ourselves to untenable risk, okay? But with filters, with strong filters that cannot be circumvented, I think that's the solution.
Rav Meir, the filters are primarily meant for home computers, right?
And for the smartphones.
I have a comment, Rabbi Hertz. I have a comment somebody just sent in. Moshe from Lakewood. He says, He says, it would take me 10 minutes to get past the filter. He said, my ninth grader can do it in around 30 seconds.
Right. And I tell you more than this. It's a broader question.
Well, let me just finish. He says, did you ever hear of a proxy? I'm just reading. He says, my ninth grader could do it in 30 seconds. Did you ever hear of a proxy?
No, I'm not familiar with a proxy.
These are servers, I guess, that can, you know, you go through the server and it takes you wherever you'd like.
Yeah, listen, the question is like this. I do a workshop on technology. It's called, I call it, you know, postpone, protect, prepare. Postpone as long as possible. You protect the kids while they're using it in your presence, but ultimately you have to be able to train them to be able to make good choices on their own. And the question I always start my workshops with is, how old do you think a child has to be today to do anything they want on technology, and the parents or anybody else will never know? And the age is not 15. You know, it's somewhere between 8 and whatever it is. I mean, you know, if the kids want to get into trouble, that's the real issue. And I'll tell you, I have always tried to keep policies in our school that are real and that reflect what the parents, I think, were made. Another huge issue is a lot of the parents in the schools are not on the same page as schools as far as technology use. The yeshiva has a policy. The parents aren't on the same page. It's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous problem. And, you know, again, Rabbi, my night job of dealing in Project Yetz would tell you that there's a very, very, very big gap in this whole area.
Big gap in
A very big gap, he's saying, in this area between the parents and the school.
Meaning, this is not a 5-minute conversation, but the whole issue of preparedness. Ultimately, we have to be able to train our children. There's going to be a time, and that time comes earlier and earlier. Constantly, that time is moving back. Younger and younger, where children have access to anything in the world they want. These filters, when the first generation of filters came out, I had a few kids that I was dealing with, some kids at risk. I used to call them up and ask them how to get around any particular filter. I mean, the kids, there's no such thing as a complete filter, and it's a very, very challenging topic. Let me offer another idea. I was in a Dovid's home earlier this evening. I showed him, we published a Chumash book, two beginner Chumash books, and we're about to release I'm biased, but a really top-notch introductory Gemara program to introduce Talmidim to Gemara. I made an e-book. We're releasing an e-book for a Chumash book with an interactive homework sheet that can be used on a tablet. Go to my website, it's rabbihorowitz.com. You can take a look. It'll be coming out with it soon. The other question is, our children that are today 4 and 6 and 8 that are able to flip through our phones and look at pictures. I'm not even talking about inappropriate
content. Rabbi Horowitz is asking, are we doing enough to engage the minds of our teched up children? Are the old style school books that we're giving our kids in second and third and fourth really going to do it for kids who grew up on iPads and from the little, you know, from toddler age, just their iPad is the new book? And how are we as educators keeping up with them? I want to thank you very much. We're running out of time. We had two fabulous educators tonight in our discussion, Rabbi Meir Hertz, the dean and founder of Tashbar in Lakewood, and Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, the dean of Darkei Noam in Muncie and founder of Project Yes. Thank you very much, Rabbi Issa. I hope to have you on a later program. I probably have 50 questions that have been emailed in we have to catch up on. Thank you very much.
Rav David, the credit is entirely yours. You put together a wonderful and informative program. Thank you.
Yeah. Mayor, it was a pleasure, a real pleasure. Thank you very much. And Rav David, thanks for having us. A good talk to all listeners.
Let me conclude, Rabbi Issa, with one thought. In this week's parsha we had where Moshe Rabbeinu tells Kal Yisrael, Hayoyim atem niyesem la'am. Today you became an am. Now, there's a problem here, because 200 years before that, Pare said, Am b'nei Yisrael, av rav atzim imenu, hava nischak malay. We were called an am 200 years before today. So why does Moshe say that it's today? You don't become an am by somebody resenting you. You become an am by having a mission, the Torah, the beauty of the Torah. Thank you so much, everybody. I look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, halakhic debates of current events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.